Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Imagine you're at an exclusive party. Across the crowded room, you spot the most stunning man. You spit take your champagne. He keeps approaching, and then he says,
"Your tanning session is now complete."
What just happened? You found your escape at Palm Beach Tan. Break from the chaos at a Palm Beach Tan near you and leave rejuvenated. Take time for yourself at Palm Beach Tan and take that feeling with you wherever you go. Get up to $25 off your first month. Featuring Australian Gold. Hot guy not included.
A roast as dark as the night. Perfect for fueling the cryptid research and mad ravings required for your podcasting. Don't mind the red eyes. He's just trying to warn you of the bridge.
The bridge.
Finally, from the caffeine-addled brains of Springheel Jack Coffee and Last Podcast on the Left, we bring you Mothman's Red Eye Blend. Yes, delicious Panama beans. Go to lastpodcastmerch.com to order yours today.
Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Ben Kissel here with Henry Zebrowski.
Yeah, it's me, man.
Yeah, bro. Henry Zebrowski is smoking some of that sweet Last Podcast on the Left, babe. So go out there and purchase yourself some. I hope you enjoy it. We have sativa, we have indica, and we have a hybrid. And I have to tell you, from my personal experience, they are wonderful.
Super tasty live resin. You really get the delicious weedy taste, which is what I like. And yes, three different experiences. You go to your local vape store and get it.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We absolutely love you. Can't wait to see you on the road and get that vape, put it in your brain, and have a good time.
And if you want us at your favorite weed store, give them a call and ask for them by name.
Absolutely.
Last Podcast on the Left, it's weed.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the Last Podcast on the Left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Family.
Oh man, I hate this.
Come on, join my sisters with me.
I'm having sex with my son.
Oh man.
Family.
I'm gonna go to the bathroom, Daddy. I gotta go to the bathroom,
well,
Daddy.
Let me suck your dick first. Let's see if it's gone.
Get out of here.
Guys, what a fun way to start. I had a question for the both of you.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay. This is a real question. It pertains to the Barker gang.
My Barker.
If we were all like families. We're all like a gang of criminals, and you
sure.
were a group together. You were a gang. Do you think it would make it more or less difficult if you were also having sex with them? Like if you were like Marcus, you're
oh
robbing a bank
God.
With your brothers. Mm-hmm. Do you think it makes it difficult to cut up the money if you've been all having sex with each other? Or do you think that makes it easier?
I would say it would make it easier because you definitely have bigger things on your mind. Like you're going to be more distracted because you're thinking, oh my God, I'm having sex with my family. There's something fucking absolutely fucking awful here. So you're like, yeah, fuck it. Take the extra $5. I don't care.
That seems like a you problem.
I'm going to push back a little bit on that. I'm going to go with the Fleetwood Mac example of what happens when family starts having sex with each other. Sure, you might get the biggest heist of your life. You might have your rumors, but in the long run, oh, bat chatter.
All the time.
All of a sudden, Lindsey Buckingham is talking. All of a sudden, Stevie Nicks has something to say.
You came harder for Chris.
Whoa. So I think in the long run, it'll lead to total and utter destruction. Welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left, everyone. I am Ben, hanging out with Marcus.
Yeah, Marcus. Absolutely fucking just absolutely jazzed that you started the show by asking that question.
Me too.
Jazzed,
fantastic.
I am.
Me too.
And Henry Zebrowski.
We family.
And the nice thing is, in 10 years, Henry is actually going to be in charge of the census. So that'll be, make sure you fill that out and make sure you figure out who you like to have sex with in your family the most.
And if you are currently inside of your brother when I come to do the census at your home, you count as one person.
You count as one. Well, isn't that true love? All right, everyone. Today's topic, people have been clamoring for it. I know I say that sometimes, but when they clamor, I tell them, I tell you when they clamor.
People like Tommy Gunn material.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Tommy Gunn. Ooh, also a great name for a boxer.
Yeah. It's the name of a famous porn star as well.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, everyone. We are on to Ma Barker.
Ma Barker was a gangland figure of the 20s and 30s who allegedly ruled over the Barker-Karpus gang, which was known far and wide as one of the most dangerous, ambitious, intelligent, and successful violent criminal enterprises of the era.
These guys were the real fucking deal. These were some of the most dangerous people of this time period, and it's fun to get in the middle of them.
Well, who was more dangerous, them or the Beagle Boys from DuckTales?
Actually, the Beagle Boys were kind of based on the Barker gang.
Oh, no kidding.
Whoa, yeah, do you get it now?
But that's the thing. Do you get it? Beagles, Barkers,
Beagle Boys. They see, look at that. He loves dogs. Now we're educating Pissel.
That's right.
Finally, I'm puffing. Finally, a story from me.
Whoa, characters.
You know I got one.
Well, according to legend, Ma Barker was a stout, cigar-chomping mastermind who stole more money than John Dillinger, Pretty Boy Floyd, Babyface Nelson, and Bonnie and Clyde combined.
Whoa.
Although beating Bonnie and Clyde wasn't much of a challenge if we're talking pure numbers.
Yeah, Bonnie and Clyde, while we love them, and we love our impotent king, Clyde, we love him, we stan him, we know for a fact that they stood by each other's side to the very end, even though he couldn't put it inside.
I don't think people say stan anymore, though.
Who cares, man? Okay. I'm here now.
Years out of fashion.
Okay.
Years out.
Their relationship is very fire.
It's fire, yes.
And
it's
so,
on fire.
But they weren't good at the game,
right,
per se. They caught the nation's attention.
I think love got in the way in their case, did it not?
I don't know. I feel like in a way, their bond was different because, again, they couldn't fuck. So a part of it was maybe, you know, who fucking knows? Maybe that actually helped, being able to keep your eye on the ball. But the Barrow gang was not very good at their jobs.
No.
The Barker-Karpus gang, though, they really set the bar for what you could do in the gangland era.
Very good.
Planning from afar, Ma Barker supposedly used her four sons as her instruments of chaos, directing the boys throughout their lives in all the best ways to steal, cheat, rob, and murder, all because it gave Ma a little tickle in her bottom to do so.
You know what else? Let me tell you who else has been giving Ma a tickle in her bottom. My first son, Herbert.
Oh, my! That was my grandfather's name.
Yeah, but now he's fucking me as my son.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, and I got a thing to say to you, young man. I switched from cigars to cigarettes to get healthy.
Oh, that's probably not going to work.
No.
I think you actually have that in reverse.
Well, under Ma Barker's supposed tutelage and guidance, the Barker-Karpus gang was so dangerous that 5 of the top 10 criminals in the FBI's most wanted list were members of the 24-strong Barker-Karpus crew.
It really is not good when your family tree and the FBI most wanted list combine into one thing.
I don't know, man. As long as we're doing this as a family, this is what I say to Jackie. This is what I say to my mother.
Your mother.
If we're going to be in this fucking game, we got to be number one. We got to be the top. So, you know, if Zabrowskis are going to start doing group rapes, we got to be the best. And if we're going to be the best, we're doing
lobster rolls. Well, I don't want to think about your mother or Jackie. You have put them in a horrible situation.
That's what they get.
No, it is not what they get, nor do they deserve
but
that.
But again, if we were making lobster rolls, I would say the same thing.
Okay, exactly. Well, let's stick with lobster rolls, please.
Now, even though the Barker-Karpus gang operated both during and after Prohibition, they didn't really run liquor, girls, and gambling like a lot of the other larger gangs at the time did. See, while your George Remus's, Lucky Lucianos, and Al Capones were making a killing bootlegging liquor in defiance of the Volstead Act.
They were businessmen.
This is
the business we've chosen.
This is where they actually served a public good. I mean, other than the fact I think you went blind
all the murder,
from the gin.
Extreme amounts of murder and violence that came as a result of Prohibition.
They would have just stuck with being the Anheuser-Busch of gangsters.
Business,
that
sure,
would have been
fine,
but yeah.
The Barker-Karpus gang were straight-up violent criminals who reveled in committing violent crimes for profit, and they were extraordinarily good at what they did. They were involved in bank robberies, jewelry store heists, car thefts, payroll pilfers, and most profitably, kidnappings.
Whoa.
By the time they were all killed or caught, the Barker-Karpus gang had stolen $3 million in merchandise and cash. Adjusted for inflation, that's 50 million dollars. Seriously, in today's cash.
That is like some GTA. That is Grand Theft Auto. That is a video game amount of money.
It more than doubles the score of the infamous Lufthansa heist of 1978.
Whoa. Man, have you any done any reading into the Lufthansa heist?
Lufthansa. Yeah,
the Lufthansa. It's really interesting. That's a relax fit one day. I know you don't like mob stories, but I love the idea of the story of a bunch of mob guys all getting together. They do this perfect plan. They rob Lufthansa of like all of this, like this money exchange. All they had to do was like, they basically tied up five guys. They walked out with something like $8 million.
So it was 20, adjusted for inflation, it was $23
million. It was nice. A huge amount of money. They walked out in pure cash. But then how every, like the one guy that ran it realized it was like, oh, fuck. I trusted all of these morons, liars, cheats, and thieves.
Right, well, that's the problem.
Yeah, and then he killed the entire group.
Oh, that'll help.
That did the heist.
Then he got all the money.
No, he went to jail as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it seems to be crime doesn't pay.
Actually, I don't think he ever went to jail for it.
He went to jail for murder later on. Not for the Lufthansa heist. Only one person went to jail for the Lufthansa heist.
That's
and
right.
That was the man who stole the pretzel.
Yep.
Don't steal a pretzel on
Thank
a German
you.
Airline.
You're right. You know what?
I believe it's German.
You're right. It is German. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that $50 million, they made that in 4 years.
Whew.
And you know, and that doesn't sound like a long period of time, but 4 years is far longer than any other violent criminal gang of the Prohibition Depression era made it. None of it. They made it very, very short period because they all either got killed or caught.
Absolutely. And they did the berserker lifestyle, which running for 4 years
Exhausting.
As a full on like heavy assault robbery group that kills when they can, kidnapping, high speed chases. That's like, I would say that's 16 years of normal human life.
Sure. Yeah. They age like dogs, much like the Beagle Boys.
Yep. They were dogs.
And that's also after they had already been solo criminals for many years before that. It's just that Barker Karpus was the most profitable venture the Barker family ever had.
This Which is the dream though, team. They're bringing the best of the best of the best of the best.
Sure, but it's just sad because it's unlike the Traveling Wilburys, which is probably the least successful version of any one of their solo careers. That's
true. Of course, Traveling Wilburys, a very unknown group with Neil Young and Bob Dylan.
Completely incorrect so far, but that's
fantastic.
Fine. It's fine, though. It was fine.
Now, while the Barker Karpus gang isn't solely responsible for the formation of the FBI, they were certainly one of the largest reasons behind its creation. In addition to the loot they stole, the Barker Karpus gang also killed, at minimum, 10 people, in the commission of getting away with one crime or another. And those 10 people included a whole pile of cops. Now, in the FBI's eventual version of events, Kate Ma Barker basically ran a crime college, tutoring both her four sons and their friends in various criminal activities using lessons she learned from reading true crime magazines.
Oh, okay.
The one lesson I never got to was how to eat pussy underwater.
Oh, my goodness. Well, now that's extremely difficult because humans need oxygen and the water gets in your throat. And then will the vagina even feel the tongue?
Well, that was supposedly Ma in private. In public, the FBI claimed, Ma Barker played the put-upon, constantly-in-crisis mother who again and again got her sons off the hook for serious crimes with nothing more than a well-placed tear and a plea to the right judge.
This is the mother you want. This is really the mother you want. She
I mean, that's
the
mother I had, to be honest.
We've been talking about this in private.
We very much have been. Yes,
you can't punish Benjamin. He's a good kid. He's a good boy.
And she goes,
I was just remembering last night with my long husband, Banks. But no, she is an enabler. That's why when we'll get down to
enabler, a defender.
Yes, both. It is both.
I would say enabler is by far the...
It is both. But she is an interesting woman because I think, because again, they try to paint her as the mastermind. And what we'll show you, I think, in this series and as we go, and we'll talk about this again and again, she's not necessarily the mastermind, but she enjoyed the criminal life and she enjoyed the entrapments.
Well, as we shall see by the end of the series, while the FBI didn't need to sell the Ma Barker narrative to capture the Barker Karpus gang, they definitely had a vested interest in making sure that the public thought that Ma Barker was a dangerous criminal genius.
And I don't know why they did that, except for maybe they're trying to validate the reason why, spoiler alert, she ended her life in a pile of blood riddled with bullets.
Oh, no kidding. Isn't that kind of fun, the way the bullets went into the blood there that was in piles? I feel like also the FBI needed to validate its own existence.
Very much so.
So you better prop up these people and be like, they're masterminds. And it's like, I think she just took a dump in her pants.
And if anything tells you a thing about the FBI, the next series we'll be working on shows for a fact that the CIA, the most disreputable branch of the government, didn't want to work with the FBI because they didn't trust them.
Yeah. Yep. Well, it was changed a little bit after 2001.
Yep.
Now, the real brains behind the Barker Karpus gang, Alvin Old Creepy Karpus.
Old Creepy was his nickname?
Oh, yeah.
Old Creepy. Yeah, we've mentioned him. Like, this is the third time I think we've mentioned him. This is when we're finally going to get into the story of Old Creepy. They called him Old Creepy.
Oh, fantastic.
They called him Old Creepy because he had very creepy eyes and a creepy smile. Just looking at him made you feel uncomfortable.
I wish you could look at me. He does the Herman Cain smile. Do you remember the slow smile? Like,
imagine
like it smiled
no pizza.
As it looked natural on his face.
999. Yeah. Well, I love Old Creepy, and I loved his show on PBS when he was the interviewer. I'm thinking of Charlie Rose.
I don't know what he did.
Still some great interviews, but yeah, apparently he's done doing those.
Yeah. Well, Old Creepy had a few choice words to say about Ma Barker's supposed criminal genius when he wrote his autobiography years later.
Oh.
According to Karpus, Ma Barker couldn't organize breakfast.
I get it, though.
And that is one of the highest insults you could give
to a mother.
To a mother in
Absolutely.
That era.
No.
Couldn't organize breakfast.
She's fun, Mom. She orders pizza. She takes you to the fucking the Discovery Zone. She's fun.
Pizza mm-hmm. bagels, man. You want to get your room cleaned by your friend? Tostina's Pizza Rolls. You bribe them.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
It's a horrible lesson.
Well, Karpus said that Ma Barker was sweet and loved her sons. Probably Aww. Loved him too much. It's pretty much the last man left alive to tell the tale. Karpus said that Ma Barker ultimately spent most of her time doing jigsaw puzzles and banging dudes.
Seriously,
good
man.
Good for her.
This is also what's interesting. Yes, because maybe there is a bit of Yas Queen in this series. All Ma Barker did was collect dick. Everywhere she went, she just lived the life. They get her sons would go do all of this dirty work for her, come bring her gifts, bring her money, and then she'd just sit on it. And then when one of her sons decided they were done with whatever dick she was sitting on, she'd be like, take him please, and then she's done with it, man. She just fucking, we'll get to it, but yeah. Wow, a lot of boyfriends taken care of by these sons.
She
just get a new one.
She's a penis fly trap. She absolutely collected, as Henry said, penises.
Now, most likely, the truth lies somewhere in between. While Ma Barker certainly wasn't directing and organizing one of the most successful violent criminal enterprises of the early 20th century, she also probably wasn't the doddering jigsaw-obsessed biddy she's sometimes painted to be. Instead, Ma Barker seems like a woman who just fucking loved crime.
Yeah.
Cool.
She loved that her boys were criminals.
She loved
the nice clothes and lifestyle that came from crime. And she especially loved it that if she got tired of a boyfriend, her boys or their associates would delight in slitting the poor bastard's throat.
She's a fun girl. She's a party. She's a party girl. She's a part of the scene.
You're gonna want to make sure that she finishes.
Oh yeah,
because
man.
That is one of those. You better not be a pre-cummer. You better do exactly as she says.
You need
says.
To show up with some toys. You need to know where the clit is. And this is 1930. This is before science discovered the clit.
Oh my goodness. And that was just wooden weird dildos.
No, yes. And it was like one of the had those big wheels on it
yeah.
and the tiny seats on it. And you go, as it goes in and out.
Old timey bicycle.
Yeah, but it had a cock on the other side of it.
Oh, I see.
Old timey fuck machines.
Old timey fuck machine.
Yeah. Oh.
But even though Ma Barker was more of an accessory than a ringleader, the story of the Barker Karpus gang is still one of the most fascinating of the Prohibition Depression era, and by far one of the bloodiest. But before we get into the tale, let's acknowledge our sources today. We've got Ma Barker, America's Most Wanted Mother by Chris Enns and Howard Kazanjian for the overall story.
I mean, technically, I think that's Stormy Daniels now.
The Most Wanted Mother.
Yeah.
Stormy. I don't know if Come she on. Has any children there.
Lisa. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know. But
you think maybe Lisa Ann.
Yeah.
No, it's not even Lisa Ann. It's the blonde woman that she's in all of them now.
Julia Grumson.
Julia Grumson. She is one of the best because she always eats blueberry muffins during sex.
And it comes out at the end and you're like,
well,
oh,
I don't know.
Look
about
at that.
That.
Oh,
I've never gotten to the end of a porno.
We've also got Public Enemies, America's Greatest Crime Wave and the Birth of the FBI by Brian Burroughs. That gives us the FBI perspective. And we've got Secret Partners, Big Tom Brown and the Barker Gang by Tom Mahoney. That's for some good old Midwestern gangland intrigue that we're going to get into in episode 2.
Yeah. Cool.
Going to get into St. Paul, Minnesota.
And how nefarious St. Paul used to be and not the home of the quilted... The quilted Afghan.
You'll still die there. You could still die there pretty easily.
Diabetes,
I can get you killed anywhere.
Heart disease.
Now, really, while Alvin Karpus was without a doubt the reason why the Barker Karpus gang was ultimately so successful, the Barker brothers were the reason why the gang was so violent and bold. Take away the Barkers from this equation, and Karpus doesn't have the guts or the grit to pull off such daring robberies and kidnappings. But take away Alvin Karpus, and the Barker boys, as we'll see in this first episode, just get caught over and over again.
Barker boys, you got to add that special mix. You got to have the Bash brothers.
Yeah.
You got to have the fat goalie.
Yeah.
You got to have that woman, girl.
Sure. Are you just describing the Mighty Ducks?
Yes. Okay. You need a whole team.
So without further ado, let's get into the story of the Barker family, starting with the matriarch, the titular Ma Barker.
Oh, wow.
Titulus.
Okay. Yes.
Ma Barker was born close to Springfield, Missouri in 1873 with the name Arizona Donnie Clark.
Wow, although, I like that name.
Donnie's a good name for a girl.
I like Arizona. Yeah. I've never heard that before. You call her Zona? You call her Ari?
Mm-hmm. Although she would be known throughout her life by the much less ostentatious name of Kate.
Name's Kate!
Kate?
Yep.
How'd you go from Arizona to Kate?
Cut down the letters.
Yeah, but they're not even, there's no other than the
added extra letters.
Okay, just totally changed the name.
Fuck you.
Okay.
The oldest of four kids born on a farm, Kate lost her father at the age of 7 and quickly gained a stepfather named Reuben.
Reuben!
Reuben was a police officer, and considering how he and Kate despised each other, it makes sense that she'd have a loose respect for the law.
Nothing makes somebody hate the cops more than having a cop for a daddy.
Yeah. Yes, well, there you go. Oh, it seems like you really liked your liked the perks.
I was scared of
you
my
got
father.
HBO.
Yeah, I like the free
HBO
cable.
For free. You got free cables.
And I like the fireworks that we got. And I like that we got to walk into Shea Stadium whenever we wanted because he'd just show his badge and the guy would just kind of let him through. That was nice. We got to go in the back door of JFK one time because my dad just show up. There's a lot of cool things that you can get if you have a gun.
Absolutely. And a badge.
Eventually, Kate grew up to be a strong and domineering woman, so it's probably not much of a surprise that she married a shy, mild, tiny little man named George Barker in 1892.
So, do you think that's what it is about having a big old engaging woman, like a big old woman and a tiny man? Is it really just about like riding him until he's dead?
Do you mean physically or emotionally?
I mean, both.
Hmm. For some.
I think also there's a lot of empathetic people who just like they're yin and a yang and they connect and they complete each other because he's just like, I can go and I can order the food for us, Ma. Because
yeah, you better.
Because guess you what? Order from the restaurant, you get into a fight.
Whatever.
So
you get out there, you order the food, okay? You order the food, you bring it back because we'll do the up top mouth food and then you're going to be doing the downstairs food.
Whatever.
You know what I'm saying?
I'll take care of ordering the food because you always call the wait staff racial slurs.
No, I just said. Say the word slur.
Okay.
Now, later conjecture would say that Kate Barker lived the typical farm girl life, busied by church, picnics, and hay rides. But in private, Kate supposedly spent most of her time reading all the latest true crime stories, obsessing over the daring felonies committed by the Dalton and James gangs.
You hear that, girls? You listen to this episode, you become a criminal mastermind yourself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a little bit more difficult these days, isn't it?
Nah, man. Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's actually, let's end it here. Yeah. And let's talk about Doge, NFT and Bitcoin, because I haven't seen my friends screaming at each other in a bar for the first time in like a decade until Bitcoin.
Yep.
Wow, that seems to be, it's hostile territory.
It is.
I just didn't listen.
Yeah, staying out of it.
Yep, staying out of it.
Yeah, specifically though, it said that Kate Barker paid special attention in those true crime magazines to what those criminals said about their mothers. Noting that yes. All of them claim to be raised by strong women who taught them how to fight.
You don't understand. Okay, listen, Herbert John. You listen, okay? Because some of us, we know all it takes is to believe in you.
In me. Well, this is just great, Mom. Thank you so much for all the advice and encouraging
kill
me
the girl.
To go kill
that
girl.
That's... She's got a big mouth.
Thank
She's going to say a lot of shit.
That's...
So you shoot her in the fucking head.
That's what a great mom you are.
Now, at some point, again, according to wild conjecture on both the part of the FBI and true crime journalists, Kate Barker's true crime obsession bled over into reality when she figured out she could simply birth a criminal gang all her own.
I'm going to make my fantasy alive with my vagina.
You're not supposed to think of your womb like a human cement mixer.
That's what
you're
people
do. You're not
supposed
to be like, all right, I can create an entire goddamn gang right inside of my belly.
It's kind of interesting because it's the inverse of people having kids to like work the farm or join the family business. It's like this idea of being like, wow, I could be my own matriarch of a criminal gang if I just make waffles and get out of the way. Like if I just go and I organize my side of it, which is just birthing you, then you guys all do the rest.
You say just. It's a lot of work though.
It is.
Let's respect the process. 9 months. No booze.
Are you my mom? You just channeled
no weed.
For 9 months I carried you and this
carried.
Is the thanks I get.
That's the thanks she gets? That free pool? What else have you done for her?
That's what she gets.
Now, it's highly unlikely that Kate Barker had children to build the gang much the same way a farmer breeds a workforce.
Yes.
But when her children began showing signs of criminality, she did nothing to set them on a different path. So within 9 years, Kate Barker had birthed 4 sons. Uh-huh. The eldest, Herman, was born in 1884, followed by Lloyd, Doc, and finally, Ma's favorite, Fred, in 1903.
So is the youngest.
It is.
That's right. It really is.
It really
well,
is.
We're
you
very...
wouldn't know. You're the oldest, Henry.
Yeah,
I'm
you wouldn't know at all. Yeah, yeah, you're the middle. Yeah.
Well, you're the middle. Oh, that's bad.
It's nice, though, because they can make the big mistakes on the first one. And the middle one, they made like the smaller mistakes. And then Jackie was allowed to do whatever she wanted.
Yep. That's the way it works.
Wow. That
Trickle
really
down.
Is how it works.
Yeah. Trickle down freedom. Finally.
Now, these boys were said to be high-strung, mischievous children. Excellent shots, every one of them. And they soon learned...
Wait, hold on. When did they get the guns?
Immediately.
Very
Just
early.
Just like right out of the womb?
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Yeah, okay. Real early.
Okay.
And they soon learned that no matter how much trouble they got into, Ma would always show up to bail them out and tell them that none of it was their fault.
She is a good mother.
It's hard, man. Wait, this is, again, this is where you get a kiss hole.
Really
this is also
awful mother.
No, that's not awful. No, sometimes societal rules are not, just because it's the law
Look how
doesn't
triggered.
Mean it's moral.
Look how triggered he's become. But no, like, this mother sometimes makes a Tiger Woods, right? It does make, like, champions, but also it makes a Donald Trump Jr. Right? Like, it makes the two. It makes a highly ineffectual, corrupt person. So that's like, what's the other? It's like, one is somebody who actually flourishes, and the other person realizes, oh, they'll love me no matter what I do, so I'm just going to scam my way through life.
That's a good point. It can go either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, by accounts, when George Barker mildly and ineffectively tried taking guidance of his unruly sons, Ma showed a, quote, feline intensity that told her husband that no one but herself should be her son's mentors, and in her eyes, they could do no wrong.
I could see her just grabbing his head and just spiking it against the side of a wall, and they're all like, feline intensity. Like, whoa, it's because it's domestic abuse from a woman.
Hey, yes. Kate, the boys, I got a call from the principal.
What you holding? Hold my pocket.
They said one of our boys bit the nipple off of another boy, and then he chewed it in front of him, and he said something about how...
Wait a sec, you mean my son's getting arrested for making his own bubble gum? Let me get down there and show him what these tits can do.
Okay.
I swing these tits back and forth, and I just knock people over back
and forth. Yeah, he said he learned it from watching you.
To her neighbors, Ma Barker was somewhat of an unknown quantity because she rarely socialized with anyone but her one friend, Gertrude Farmer.
You tell me Gertrude isn't the best fucking friend of all time.
I don't
Gertrude
know.
Is... No, she's a lockbox.
I don't know.
You can tell Gertrude... You can tell a Gertrude anything.
It is amazing to hear a woman like Ma Barker, because my mom's had, like, a revolving set of, like, best friends, because it's whoever is the new person that hasn't betrayed her. You know what I mean?
But like, your mom thinks people betray her because they cancel lunch.
Yes. But Ma Barker, I'm very surprised she could keep one friend for forever. That's kind of nice.
Gertrude. Yep. That's a Gertrude.
Yeah. With everyone else Ma Barker spoke to, she was cordial, but she rarely initiated conversation.
Gotta go to her.
Bit of a sphinx. Now, in 1910, just as the mischievous nature of the Barker boys was starting to turn criminal, George Barker moved his family to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, at the time, Tulsa was an oil boom town, which was good news for local hoodlums.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, oil boom towns introduce a large group of transient young men with a high tolerance for risk into an environment built to quickly take away the large paychecks they earn week after week. Of course, we know the quickest way to part someone from their money is vice. And with vice comes violence and crime.
No, with cool. vice comes dancing and smiling.
Well, it can be a lot of fun as well. Nothing wrong with a little sprinkle of vice in life. It's very needed. But Marcus, you know these people, right? Aren't these roughnecks? The roughnecks?
Yeah, you know roughnecks.
I mean, isn't that all over Texas? Like a lot of young people are like 18 years old. You go work in the oil and you got bank money. And,
we talked about this quite a bit during the Billy the Kid series.
Yeah, exactly. That's
No. I know plenty of roughnecks I've known plenty of roughnecks throughout my life. But yeah, some roughnecks are great and some are highly violent, very unpredictable individuals.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, but that's what's else. Fun.
Much like oil.
About high intensity personalities. I do like those types of people. I like people who can turn on a dime every once in a while because then it keeps a friendship fresh.
Yeah. It's not unnerving and horrifying.
No.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it, but guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about 2 literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time, because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me, to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life, how much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins. As soon as I wake up, and a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy, because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lastpod.
Now, the Barker boys were townies, and Tulsa was the perfect environment for them to start their criminal career. According to the FBI, though, this is also where Ma Barker decided to enact her plan of creating her home-brewed gang.
I think that we got 50-50 here. I think it's a bit of the chicken and the egg. I think that she wanted to feel a sense of status. I think that very early on, Ma Barker had a sense of status that she wanted to achieve. That she looked at her environment and she's like, Gertrude's fine because Gertrude makes me feel fancy. Right?
Like, Gertrude's it's like fantastic.
She boosts me. She boosts me. She's my ally. She's my number one. Right? And then everything
she's
else
she's your
around
ride
her,
or die.
Sir, I've heard that. And she is the type of person that realized when she looked at her sons, they're not good at a lot. They're not good at a lot, but they do seem, they have a lot of energy. And I just want to, I want them to do whatever they can do. But, also realizing, we're in this boomtown. Money is what makes the world go around. And it's not about just going sick and doing all this fucking oil work. That's dangerous, it's stupid, and long. There's other ways you can make money.
Mm-hmm. Well, from what J. Edgar Hoover later claimed, the Barker home in Tulsa became a meeting place for local ne'er-do-wells, a crime school that trained young punks in the art of felonious behavior before sending them out to wreak havoc on the polite world.
That's too organized to make sense.
Yeah. You see him putting lipstick all over his face, just thinking about it.
Criminals hate school.
Yeah.
Well, you can go to crime school.
Now, supposedly, Ma would hang back, and for a fee, she would act as a boy's alibi if he was ever caught for the crime.
Ah, cool. Yeah, he was inside of me the whole time. Oh, God. 9 months I carried him.
She also allegedly provided the names and addresses of people she believed had more than they deserved and can therefore part with some of their possessions.
I actually don't disagree with that idea of her. I don't think that that's outside of the parameters of Ma Barker.
Oh, yeah.
You had that person has more than they deserve. Go steal it from them and bring it back to me because I deserve it for what? Doing
it's
nothing?
That's for me.
Okay.
In reality, though, there was no crime school filled with hoodlums and thieves doing the bidding of a matriarchal mastermind. Instead, the Barker boys were just a group of young punks who hung out at the public park in Tulsa.
Do you think that if this was a different time, they'd do skate vids?
I don't think they skateboarded yet. I don't think skateboarding was invented
yet. That's what
I'm saying. It was a different time.
Do you think if they had skateboards then, we'd have gangsters?
Probably. You think maybe that's why crime went down in the 90s? Because skateboarding got by?
No, skateboarding was a crime.
That's what I'm saying. But then you flipped it around and all of a sudden now skateboarding is not a crime. So therefore you flip everybody that used to be a criminal being a skateboarder to being somebody very creative.
I remember when every parent thought if their kids watched X Games, they were going to be gay.
Yeah.
They were just like, I don't know. It's sponsored by Mountain Dew.
Well, at the public park, the Barker boys met other young hoodlums with like minds, and eventually they formed their first horde, named after the place where they all met. They called themselves the Central Park Gang.
Whoa, cool. Okay. Sure. Now the Central Park Gang will just suck your dick for $10.
Well, isn't that nice?
No, that's the Bramble Boys.
The Bramble Boys.
Now, I suppose it is tempting to think that Ma Barker was raising her four sons to be criminals, because all four did indeed become violent felons, if not straight up murderers, if the situation called for a killing. But really, it just seems like it all started with Herman Barker, the oldest. And once he started getting in trouble, every brother after him followed, all because Ma Barker always came to the rescue.
I think it might have been just because he set the example of how a person lives. Sometimes people do just you look at your family and now Herman started doing all of this criminal activity.
Right.
They look at him and they're like, what if, I don't know, maybe that's the way to go. It seems like mom's into it.
My older brother did musical theater. And then when I was a senior in high school, I also did a play.
See?
And you played?
I was in Babes in Arms. I played a character. I wasn't cast in it, but the person they cast broke his leg.
Whoa, so you just got in?
Then I got in.
How'd they find you at the end?
I auditioned. I just didn't get cast.
Oh, what did you audition with?
myself with my voice in my head.
Did you sing a song?
Yeah.
Do you remember what song you sang?
And there she goes down the road.
Is this the song?
My old butt.
You're just making stuff up. You don't remember anything
little
before
toes,
2 weeks ago.
Little toes.
I blame the tincture.
There she goes with her little toes.
He has not been right since he started his song Sober January this year.
Hey, man, it changes your brain, dude.
It does.
I couldn't have come up with little toes if I was all beer logged.
No, you're right.
Little toes.
No, I might write a musical accompaniment to Little Toes.
I would
love to do a collaboration with you for Dry January, Ben.
Yes. Woo! I'm already getting work.
Making content.
See, it's flipping. It's only been 11 days since No Alcohol and I already got a new gig.
See?
That's
See?
Right. That's
it's
right.
It's happening and right in front of our ears.
Oh yeah, ma'am. And you'll get all the royalties.
Yes, fucking Little Toes is gonna be so big.
It could be. I'm here. I get third, you know that, no matter what. That's whatever right. You guys touch.
I know.
Well, Herman was the first Barker boy arrested, going down for attempted robbery at the age of 16. In that instance, he'd gone into a drugstore and hid in the basement so he could spring out after closing time.
It's cool.
But was instead discovered in possession of burglar tools by a clerk before the doors were even locked.
Can I ask a question? Because now there's several people that do get arrested in the story for burglar tools. Do you know what they mean by burglar tools? Is it just like a crowbar and something else? Like, how do they look at you and say, oh, these are burglar tools?
Yeah, these are definitely going to burgle. There's nothing else you could do with these. You know, burgle.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, because
Ted Bundy was arrested for owning burglar tools.
Yes,
like, I think that was the first time he got arrested. Yeah. So it's, yeah, rope, crowbar, acid to burn stuff.
A woman's dress. Mm-hmm. A big cat costume so you can pretend to be a cat.
Well, that might be good, actually. Yeah. No, that's not who we're looking for. That's a cat.
Yeah, and then you're like, I simply couldn't rob. I'm a lady. And
wow.
You have a big floppy hat on, and the cop's like, it's a nice outfit. And then all of a sudden, he's taking pictures with him. You're there, and all of a sudden, you're dressed as this lady, and you got to go back to his house, and you got to pretend to be a lady by like tucking it back, and then like only showing him your butthole, and then that's and then all of a sudden, you're his wife.
I think how James Corden got the Late Show.
That's the only way possible.
Yeah, always going by the principle: all cats can talk, most cats won't talk. Love that sketch. But in a scene that will play out about a dozen times during the course of this episode, Ma Barker pled with the authorities, telling them that none of Herman's actions were really his fault.
It's not his fault.
Well, whose fault is it?
The wind. The wind. I blame the pharmacy for being so robbable.
Oh.
It's like big breasts. How are you not supposed to motorboat them?
Yeah. All right, Ma.
As a result, Herman was released to commit more crimes. Now, he tried going straight for a bit, getting a job as a cook in Springfield, Missouri. But there, he was arrested for assault and was again sprung after Ma cried Herman to freedom.
I know my son. He walks normally with two fists in front of him. And that person must have walked into his hands. I know my son. Look at these.
Oh, my.
Look at these. I snap it back and forth.
Wow, that's horrifying. Well, you said he was a chef. I mean, aren't they supposed to salt?
A cook. He's a cook. He's not a chef.
He's a cook. But you said he got busted for assault. Well, maybe they was just trying to flavor the food.
They would have got him for a pepper if there was evidence.
Yeah, they got him for assault instead.
That is fucking great.
Yeah, I wish we could get him for a guacamole over here.
I'm done.
Well, authorities agreed to spring Herman just as long as he returned to Tulsa. But within months, Herman came back to Springfield to burglarize jewelry stores. He was again caught, but this time he was sentenced to 4 years in prison, where he met another criminal with the appropriate name, Ed Kahn.
You have to be a criminal.
That's amazing.
You have to be a criminal.
A car salesman, or a pilot for some reason.
Maybe.
Now, one thing you got to know about the Barker boys is that they were physically very small.
Oh, they were?
Capable. Yes.
I always thought they were huge.
No, very small.
None of them were above 5'5".
What?
Yep.
Yeah. Most of them are 5'4".
Why does that make them scarier? It's like a roaming gang of Chihuahua pit bulls.
It is a roaming gang of me. They're all fucking... It's rogues.
Mm-hmm.
That's why dwarf rogue is really good character to play in D&D.
Yeah. And the Barker gang would use their small stature to their advantage time and again. Now, luckily, Ed Kahn was also a tiny boy. So Ed and Herman hid in a small airlock-type cage between the cells and the jail bullpen so they could jump out and surprise their jailer.
Like Ghoulies.
Yeah. I'll just be like, can you stop jumping out of me, please, little person?
Sometimes.
Stop doing this.
Us as a bunch of little people, honestly, we should all get together and we act like gremlins. No one can stop us. What are you going to do? Too much fun.
I know.
That's right. They leapt out at just the right moment, grabbed three revolvers from the jailer's office, and fled. Herman Barker back to Tulsa, and Ed Kahn disappeared to the mists of time. Never heard of him again. Well, a few months later, Herman teamed up with another criminal to rob a jewelry store, a pool hall, and a clothing store in Billings. But jeez, since this was higher profile, Herman was caught in Columbus, Montana.
This whole story is filled with the famous name of a city in another state in that another, it doesn't belong in.
Columbus, Montana. Yeah.
Columbus, Montana.
Columbus didn't even come close to Montana.
No.
I mean, he didn't come close to America, but at least in lore, he was near Cleveland.
Yeah. And he was therefore sentenced to 6 to 12 years, making him the first Barker boy to do a long stretch in the joint. While Herman cooled his heels momentarily, the other three Barker boys were, one by one, becoming reckless, dangerous criminals in their own right.
Just like my brother!
Yeah. On Independence Day, 1918, Arthur Barker, a.k.a. Doc, stole a Ford Roadster from the front of a federal building in Muskogee, Oklahoma. The car theft was quickly followed by an arrest, and while Ma Barker planned to do the same song and dance routine begging for her son's freedom,
I'm a slave for you.
No, Ma.
That's how I heard it. No, you're gonna find it. I'm a slave. Yeah.
That's a pretty good rendition of a song that comes out in 90 years.
Come on.
That's pretty good, though.
Doc escaped jail before Ma could finish her routine. Doc was recaptured, but this time waited for his mother to convince police to let him go.
Mom, do you think you could try and do the slave for you? Dance again for these cops?
Just one more time, please. I got you a snake.
Slave!
Ah, Mom Barker, you were amazing. To be fair, he could have just said, all cars look the same back then. So what if you don't know it's your car?
He was like a 15-year-old dirtbag.
Yeah.
From a different city.
He wasn't ready. Remember, he's just getting his bones right now. They're all just learning criminal ropes right now.
Yeah. Now remember, Ma Barker, she'd go in, she'd do the cry routine, get the boys out of jail. She did it again and again and again. And this may or may not be true, but decades later, a filing clerk remembered once watching Ma Barker leave jail with what he called an old lady gait.
Come now, let's go. Just me and my best friend going to the bakery alley. I'm not an improv comedian.
I'm not one. No, indeed you're not.
But after she was out of sight of the cops, she transformed from a feeble grandmother type to a rather spirited, hearty woman.
That's what my grandmother used to do when my Oma was in town, because my American grandmother, she used to have the wheelchair, or she used to have the walker, but she never needed the walker.
No. Same thing with my grandmother. She never needed the walker.
And then as soon as my Oma would show up, she would be like, oh, spry, because she was competition.
Yes, it's weird how intriguing. That happens.
But then my grandmother's pants would always just, again, fall down, even when she was sitting. So.
Just like her grandson.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Isn't that weird?
Chris.
Yeah, my brother. No, we keep our pants on. We're a pants family.
I don't know. I've seen him in some outfits.
I've seen your Instagram likes.
Well, Ma was also, according to the FBI, romantically involved with various Tulsa neighborhood criminals because they all subscribe to the same loose morals.
Hey, man, fun people.
Fun people. Once speakeasies became popular in the 1920s, one could supposedly find Ma Barker spending her time with any scalawag who happened to come along, just so long as they bought her drinks and treated her like royalty.
And that's one thing me and Ma Barker have in common.
Yeah, I mean, they're treating her great. They're buying her drinks.
Buying her drinks, man. I'll provide the company and the tits.
Let her have some fun.
Staying in the romance realm, Ma Barker was also said to be extremely jealous anytime one of her sons brought a woman around, telling all the new gals that her sons would eventually turn on them, all so she could keep her boys to herself.
That's a little weird, isn't it?
I don't know what it is about moms who do this, but I recognize this behavior. This idea of like them hanging out and like him taking a piss, just being like,
you ain't going to be around for very long.
That's scary. Yeah. That's like, what was the little nerd boy from the movie It, well, especially in the 1990s version, where the mom was very overprotective.
Yes. Yes, but she's weird.
This is battery acid, you slime.
She definitely has an obsession with her sons.
Why would anyone, like, obviously you're supposed to love your children, I get that, but like there always has to be like, I still wish you weren't here.
Yeah, it's what
like,
I
there
think.
Has to be that undercurrent of like, you know, life, it would be kind of nice if we were just together alone again without the kids.
Yes, but yeah. They were, but also just as attached to her as she was attached to them, but kind of maybe in and out.
Do you think it's one of those things like, you know, they say that some women have orgasms when they have a baby?
Oh,
and
my
they and they get and they That's actually funny. Have to they, because it get, make, gives them good feelings. So they sure. have another baby. Do you think maybe her orgasms were too strong when she had babies and that it like she imprinted on the babies?
The only time she ever squirted is when she gave birth, is what you're saying.
Maybe.
Well, maybe. All I know is if you are a man and you're in the room with your wife or your girlfriend or the random woman
don't
that you knocked
even
up.
Say you pleasure the woman.
No.
While you're giving,
if they you orgasm, fucking- what do? You also orgasm.
So
as a compliment.
So what do you do?
Because then otherwise they feel alone.
But how do you do
like,
that? But yeah, how do you know it's pain?
And then the guy's like,
orgasm?
Oh, honey, don't worry. I will orgasm with you.
But listen, okay. Like, how do you tell whether or not she orgasmed? Do you have to go... Did you go?
Do you call it going?
Did you go already? And then you have to go like, I guess my turn then. Bring my daughter over here.
No, you have to masturbate.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, you have to masturbate, but you also have to masturbate on the sly so as to not make the nurses uncomfortable.
Nurses have seen it all.
They really have.
Yeah. Now, after Doc Barker was released from his first trial, I'm here with you, boys. I'm here with you.
No, honestly, nurses, I can't even. Ugh.
No, that's going to be your future wife.
They've seen a lot. No.
Now, after Doc Barker was released from his first arrest, he stole two more roadsters and found himself back in the Tulsa County Jail. From there, he and 17 other prisoners escaped on Valentine's Day 1920 using a handsaw and sulfuric acid.
These guys are really crazy. It's really crazy how like they all like jumped in. They were so hard to keep a hold of. They have these instincts immediately. They're so aggressive.
After cutting through the cell doors, the prisoners made their way to the roof where they found a 130-foot rope waiting for them, which they used to shimmy down the side of the building to freedom. Now, no one knows for sure who got the boys these implements to escape, but some historians do actually think, you know, like a fucking legend aside, that Ma Barker probably did participate in at least delivering the implements.
Wow. This is what I'm saying. She is not innocent. She is a part of
She's
this
She's helping
game.
Her family.
Yes.
She's helping her kids out.
Now, Doc was caught again 5 days later, but this time, Ma Barker pleaded directly to the owner of one of the roadsters.
You know that this is a dumb painted car. You know that it's bad, and you need to just let my son have it. You just need to let him have it.
She wrung her hands, sobbed, and made the car owner so uncomfortable that he withdrew his complaint just to get her out of the room.
Get out, away from me. Get away from me.
Dude, I'm looking at a 1920 Roadster. These cars are freaking dope.
They are really cool.
Yeah,
cool.
I like Roadsters. Great. Yeah, those were the cars that I think Clyde Barrow preferred Roadsters.
Oh,
because
nice.
This is the time when cars are actually starting to get really fucking fast.
Did you still have to crank up the top of it?
No, I don't know. A Roadster, because that's one of the advantages that Roadsters had at this time, especially when you start getting into the mid-20s, is because you could just hop in, just turn the key, and you had a V8 engine under the hood on these fucking roadsters. These things could haul ass, comparatively at least, but every cop in America, most of them were still driving fucking Model Ts that you did have to crank and that went barely, you know, what, fucking 40 miles an hour?
But that's why the Barrow Gang lasted for as long as they did, was because
Better
of
cars.
Clyde's driving skills, his famed driving skills, and the idea of being able to outrace the cops.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Herman Barker had been released from state prison in Montana on parole and had tried going straight by getting a job as a dishwasher.
No, man. That is not the job that's going to make you go straight. The only job that's going to make you go straight literally is like, I test ice cream at the roller coaster factory. You know, like, it's got to be something fun.
I don't think that's a job.
Or being like a rock star.
Yeah,
but that's also, that didn't even
exist
yet.
Super easy job to get a hold of.
I'm just saying, like, it's very difficult to go from
Marcus
I rob
washed
banks.
Dishes.
Yeah, but look at it. He got out of it immediately. And honestly, Now that he knows what he knows about his career and when I watched Marcus as the dishwasher, let's all face it, okay?
He was good at it.
He didn't have his heart in it.
Right? Yeah, I thought he had his heart in it. I saw him do it. I saw him do it well enough. Yeah, he washed the dishes. Do you ever see any dirt on the dishes?
I didn't really inspect them.
I mean, our friend Madeline definitely came to the back and yelled at me a couple of times for taking one smoke break too many. But, you know, yeah. I did okay otherwise.
Yeah, yeah, but you weren't like a dishwasher at heart.
No. So you have to smoke. It's a dishwasher. Yeah, you have to smoke. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, by summertime, however, prohibition had begun. And Herman got in on the ground floor by working with a bootlegging gang out of Minnesota. As I said, bootlegging was never really a business that the Barker boys cottoned to. And by September, Herman and another convict robbed a jewelry store for $4,000 in merchandise. The accomplice got away, but Herman was once again arrested.
What is wrong with him?
He's just not good at getting away.
He's not good at it. He's not good at it yet.
Now, despite being below 5'5", Herman was known as a highly intimidating inmate in prison. He always wore a scowl and barely spoke without cursing, and across his chest was a rather disturbing tattoo that read, "A boy's best friend is his mom."
That's truly how you avoid attention in prison.
Oh, no. A boy's best friend is his mom.
Yeah, he's man.
That was the tattoo he had on his chest?
On his chest.
God, what is wrong with these people?
He loved his mom and he was bad at crime.
I don't even know what my mom would do if I showed up with that tattoo.
Well, for the jewelry store robbery, Herman was sentenced to 10 years in prison. But after Ma Barker wrote an impassioned letter to the parole board telling a lie that George Barker was sick and couldn't work, Herman came back home.
This is so good. She's so good at it.
She really is good
She's
at
very
it.
Very good.
I think a boy's best friend is his mom.
I mean, yeah.
Starting to think, I think you might be right.
Especially if all of your other friends died in 9/11.
Yeah.
Doc, meanwhile, was arrested again, this time in Coweta, Oklahoma, after he and a small group of thieves tried robbing a bank by digging a tunnel with picks, shovels, and nitroglycerin they'd stolen from a hardware store. The plan had been for two men to watch in the alley behind the bank while the other two dug the hole. But Doc and his buddies made the mistake of dressing too well.
Oh!
The cops were suspicious when they saw four dudes in business suits hanging around a back alley in the middle of the night. So they searched the guys.
Yeah, man, that's exactly who's fucking suspicious, man. They always say, like, I'm suspicious with my mesh shirts and my no pants on. Meanwhile, I think a bunch of guys in suits need to be rolled around by the police.
Oh, good point. I learned a lot about bank robberies. I interviewed Larry Lawton, America's number one bank robber. I'm sorry, jewelry store robber. And he has some great YouTube videos. I interviewed him on Top Hat. And he has one video about how to do it, how to properly case. And these guys made some massive mistakes.
We should go rob someone.
Well, we are not going to be good at it.
Why though?
It really requires.
I'm the wheels man.
It requires like you actually have to be kind of smart.
Yeah, you do.
You have to know people.
You have to have attention to detail. Something that none of us
that's
really
not
have.
Me.
He talks about the detail. Don't go in. Mm-hmm. If someone's in there,
don't rob
a store when someone's in there. No need. You have
I'm
an extra person.
Man.
Wait till they leave.
I'm the distraction.
Number one.
When the search, cops found four pistols and all their burglary implements. So Doc Barker briefly went back to jail. Again, though, Ma was quite convincing, so Doc was set free while his accomplices went to prison.
Damn. Wow! So the accomplice really was the difference.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. In the early days, yeah, she really was. Now, by this point, Ma Barker had gotten Doc and Herman out of half a dozen crimes, if not more, and there was still plenty of pleading left in her future. The son she wasn't able to help, however, was her second son, Lloyd.
It's hard to help a Lloyd.
Yeah. Nicknamed Red because he had red hair.
Sure.
Lloyd was more of a follower than an instigator. And while the other Barker boys could seemingly get out of anything, Lloyd went down and stayed down on his very first arrest. In June of 1921, Lloyd and four other members of the Central Park gang robbed a mail wagon in Kansas, reaping $3,000 in liberty bonds. Mm. After fleeing, the gang was caught while trying to steal a car in Miami.
And
Oklahoma.
Remember, Miami, Oklahoma.
Miami, Oklahoma.
Yeah, there's also a Miami, Texas, except you say it Miami.
Yeah, Miami. I know that. Mm-hmm.
That is like. It can't just imagine being like, we're going on vacation. Spring break is going to be amazing
Miami.
This year. We got tickets to Miami. They were super cheap for some reason. I have no idea why.
Oklahoma. And then it's show up and then it's immediately like, I don't think they have a plantain here.
Oh.
Now, interestingly and tragically for Lloyd, Ma Barker did not use the same tactics that had worked for Doc and Herman. Possibly because Lloyd was one of her favorites, Ma lost her head a little bit. She was stern and domineering instead of pitiful and sympathetic. She demanded that her son be let loose because he'd done nothing wrong.
You get him out of there right now! Wow. That is my son!
Whoa!
I made that boy!
Ma, I really enjoyed...
I have milk for him!
Yeah, I remember when you used to sing for us, but now you're just screaming at
us. I will have my son!
Okay.
Now, this was very much the wrong move, because instead of letting him go, the judge moved Lloyd to another jail further away, found him guilty, and sentenced him to 25 years in Leavenworth Penitentiary, where Lloyd shared grounds with Carl Panzram.
Whoa!
Oh,
cool.
My God.
So what are you in for? I rape everything. I will break you on the floor of my dark imagination.
I robbed a jewelry store.
Cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of cute compared to what you did with everyone.
Let's just skip ahead of all the pleasantries and get to the rape.
Oh, yeah.
Now, while he was in prison, and this is something, this is why people say, why Henry's making so many mom has sex with the sons jokes. And this is really the only reason why that people have this rumor.
As if he needed a reason to make those jokes, but this is nice to actually give them a, to give them a home is kind of nice.
People joke about me. People say, oh, Henry, oh, he's crass. I come up with jokes, educated jokes from the source material.
Yes.
This is all written, put together. I'm a master. At historical jokes.
You've been in prison for 25 years. You're in solitary confinement right now.
Oh, this has all been a fantasy in my deranged mind.
Reportedly, Lloyd wrote letters to his mother in a tone that was described as almost sexual by Detective Harrison Moreland, writing for Master Detective. He was writing for Master Detective magazine. Well, Detective Harrison Moreland was. He said that the tone in the letters was like a sweetheart. Like, you know, you would think that he was writing to his girlfriend and not his mother. And this, of course, led to speculation that Ma Barker had sexual relations with her sons, but only her second and fourth, never her first or third.
Yeah.
Is that a compliment or a diss to the third and first?
The implication is that they would have if she wanted to, but the knowledge comes from the fact that the second and fourth kids were her favorites. But again, no proof here.
It's just a little disgusting.
Yeah, there's no pictures of her like sucking her son's dick or anything like
that. Well, it's a different time. You have to bring somebody in. You have the big old cameras and stuff. It's just different.
Rule 34. You don't know what happens out there now. I don't know what kind of content like that is out there now. I'm certain there is some.
Oh, no, Ma, what are you doing?
Ma, what's happening?
Stop with all that stuff, please, God.
But to wrap up Lloyd's story, he was sentenced to 25 years in prison, did most the fucking time, was granted parole in 1938, worked as a cook in a prisoner of war camp in Michigan during World War II, and was murdered by his wife in 1949 during a mental break.
Yeah.
She pled not guilty by reason of insanity and died in 1986 at the Colorado State Insane Asylum.
It's really,
his
story
is his wife?
No, she murdered him. Like, it's a very interesting story.
By his wife.
Yeah. And it's very interesting because it's this crazy end because he did manage to kind of like go straight and do the shit. And he was the last surviving Barker boy.
And you said
at the end. And so when she shot him, it was kind of, it was a scandal.
Yeah, all the neighbors, it was like they'd all been, like, they were as surprised as they could be as if you said, like, D.B. Cooper was my next door neighbor. Like, they all freaked out. Like, holy shit, a Barker boy was living here this entire time?
They didn't even hear anything. Not even on a full moon, they didn't hear him.
No. A Barker with the barking of the dogs. The
dog,
dogs
I get
it.
Bark at the moon.
Sure.
Ah, Jules. Oh, Jules. Make a wife smile today. The road to getting engaged can be long and full of memories and pitfalls and landmines. Or it can be short and thrilling, like a roller coaster on the way to the police department. But the road to finding the perfect engagement ring is a straightforward path every time. All you've got to do is head over to BlueNile.com and they're going to ship them rocks straight to your wife's new fingers. On BlueNile.com, you can create a bigger, more brilliant piece than you can imagine. At a price you won't find at a traditional jeweler, Blue Nile is the original online jeweler since 1999. That's present time to me. Their diamond price guarantee means that in most cases, they can meet or beat a competitor's price on a comparable diamond. I know when I got my wife a beautiful Blue Nile necklace, the first thing she did was, what did you do? But afterwards, she was so happy to have it, and she loved it, and she wore it when we went on vacation, and my own, did everybody come around being like, where'd you get that piece, you beautiful woman? And I was like, stop talking to my wife. She's spoken for. You can see it with the Blue Nile bling she's got on her. Right now, get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code LASTPODCAST at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code LASTPODCAST at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done. And Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. And isn't that what matters most? Better writing means a stronger impact. Grammarly works across 500,000 apps and websites. You can't escape it. Like the ever-pervasive octopus of malice that is the NSA. Grammarly is watching your every move, making sure that you're doing it right. Data privacy and security are woven into the foundation of Grammarly, into the very essence of its nature. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner, and it helps your team make their point and move faster, because that's the key there. Work smarter, not harder. Yes, Grammarly. You know how many times it saves me from writing a long, rambling, one-sentence email at 4 o'clock in the morning to my beloved employees? Makes me sound like someone who doesn't just have a BA in theater. All right, I was taught how to be a tree. I was not taught how to survive as an adult. All right, my job was to cry in front of a weird Southern man who just told me all sorts of weird stuff about my body. I didn't learn how to write. So thank you, Grammarly, because you're making me the boss I gotta be to motivate my team to get out there. And, oh, man, you don't want to mess with them. Thanks, Grammarly. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at Grammarly.com/podcast. That's Grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors. It's a waste. Don't waste hours on apps. Besides appetizers, that's the kind of apps I like. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Did you know that empanada is already Spanish? I didn't. Thanks, Babbel. Did you know that burrito is already Spanish? Wow, I just got to learn all the rest. And eventually, I'm going to be eating downtown Mexico. Thanks, Babbel. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at Babbel.com/left. Get up to 60% off at Babbel.com/left, spelled Babbel.com/left. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So that's one Barker brother down, three to go. Now, up to this point, the Barker boys had committed a lot of crimes, but had never seriously hurt anyone, or at least they had never been charged with hurting anyone. That, however, changed on August 26th, 1921, in the commission of a safe robbery. That night, Doc and his accomplices planned to yeg the safe at the Fuller Construction Company in Tulsa, but they were intercepted by a 68-year-old night watchman named Thomas Sherrill. Without a moment's thought, Doc and his accomplice pulled their pistols and fired, killing Sherrill with a shot to the chest and a shot to the head.
Oh, he already made it to 68, which is like 120 in that era.
Yeah, man.
He had such a good long life. Oh, he should have retired at 65.
It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard, man. I just, you know what's funny? I don't necessarily worry about dying as a murder victim. I just worry about dying as a murder victim as an old man. I don't want to be. I don't want to make it to 75 and then get murdered. Yeah.
I really don't. I just or be a part of like some massive, like, you know, the great molasses explosion too. You know, where there's a new giant molasses explosion.
Something like that actually happened recently, a sugar factory or something.
You're like, I don't want to die in like, you know, like, a fun new thing that OSHA then has to create a bunch of new rules for.
No, I don't want to. It reminds me of that documentary, fantastic documentary, Orion.
Oh, yes.
All about the Elvis Orion's impersonator, wonderful. The man who took over for Elvis, prolonging the myth that Elvis was still alive, but a fantastic doc.
Saying taking over for Elvis, that's a bit of a stretch.
That's what they wanted him to do.
He stole his persona.
He did not steal it.
We'll see.
No, check out the doc. Watch the doc again. I watch it every night. Did you watch the doc again? I watch it every night.
You watch it every night?
Oh, I watched it once.
You don't even remember what song you sang in the high school audition that you did for the one musical.
Little toes, there she goes, walking away. Wish she was walking towards me today, but turns out...
Keeps going. His fake song keeps going.
Turns out... Little Toes got a scramble.
Well, it took police months to catch up with Doc Barker. But once they did, even Ma Barker's copious tears could not get her son out of a murder charge. He was found guilty and was subsequently sentenced to life at the Oklahoma State Prison. Now, according to FBI reports that probably aren't true, Ma became obsessed with getting Doc out of jail and was, at the time, working to expand the membership of the Central Park gang with her two remaining sons.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just her and her two kids.
Yeah. I don't think that she was trying to expand the gang. I think that she I don't think that that is a part of this. I think that she just was happy that she had some sons still burglarizing things.
Okay. Yeah.
But even if Ma wasn't hatching a master plan, Doc eventually would be released.
Yeah. Really?
He would get out of a life sentence and it would be sooner rather than later. In the meantime, though, there was still Herman and Ma's youngest and favorite son, Little Fred.
Yeah, he's cute.
Yeah, Little Freddy.
Fred's cute.
Fred.
Freddy Freaka.
Yeah.
Freddy Freaka.
Freddy Freaka.
Being the youngest, Fred wanted nothing more than to follow in his brother's criminal footsteps. And as such, his criminal career also started in car theft. But Fred's first interaction with the cops got him a bullet in the leg.
Hey, man, you got to learn early.
These guys also got shot a lot.
Yeah, man. That's the thing, too, about all of these gangland types. They all get shot multiple times and just keep coming back.
Seems like you could, at that era... Seems like you could die from a bullet in the leg infection and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You could. You definitely could. The next year, Fred and six other Central Park gang members robbed another mail truck near, again, Miami, Oklahoma. Soon after, Fred and another outlaw robbed $600 from a group of men playing poker at an auto repair shop in Tulsa. For the poker heist, cops tracked Fred down and shot him in the hand after he surrendered, presumably for talking shit. That's why someone gets shot after they get surrendered.
Surely, especially in this time period and now.
All right.
He was sentenced to 5 years in a reformatory, got released after just two, and was immediately arrested again for robbing a bank and forging a money order.
He just kept going. They weren't good. Give it a break. Relax. Take a breather for a second. But it's like, I guess, in show business. Where you just love it so much, you keep coming back, no matter how many times you get rejected.
Yeah, but it's totally different because they're robbing stuff.
I'm saying, sometimes acting feels like highway robbery.
It really does.
It's around this time. I mean, that's the thing. We've been talking about Ma Barker this entire time.
Right.
George Barker is still there.
He's just hanging out.
The quiet husband.
The quiet husband is just hanging out, like watching his homicidal kids and his homicidal inclined wife
I'm not going to lie. That is fun. You have your PBRs. You just sit there and like, what you guys working on? Another robbery, huh? Oh, my family is crazy.
You become Jim Jones's father.
Well, you just sit there and watch everyone kind of have fun. You have chaos all around you.
He hated it. He was overwhelmed with it because he was not a criminal himself. And he was also overwhelmed with his inability to do anything about it because he was very shy. He was very quiet. And his sons were fucking psychopaths.
Put down the Tommy guns. If you would all just, with your robberies, and if everyone could just, can't we all just sit around the radio and imagine
Shut
Indians?
Up, Dad.
I know it's not as, yes.
Hey, Dad.
Yes.
What is this?
Oh, your dick is out of your pants. Yeah. I hate this.
You idiot.
I hate this family.
You look at my dick.
I hate it. I made that dick.
Yeah. Look like yours, Dad.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, George just cut his losses. He just packed up and moved to Joplin, Missouri.
He's like, I'm fucking done with this. That's great. Go to Joplin. I would rather be in Hurricane or Tornado Alley than live in this family.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Ma, it said, was largely indifferent to George's exit because all she really cared about was her boys and what sort of excitement their criminal activity could bring her way.
Oh, yeah.
See, by the time George left, prohibition, enforced by the Volstead Act, had been in effect for about 6 years.
Boo.
As a result, bootlegging had produced the biggest crime wave America had ever seen, both in terms of people breaking the law by drinking alcohol and in terms of bootleggers committing heinous crimes in the pursuit of selling alcohol.
Sweet, sweet booze, man. Don't ever take it from me. Don't you take it from me, government.
No one's taking it from you.
And while the Barkers never really got into bootlegging, as I said, the resources that the federal government spent enforcing the Volstead Act and in fighting the new scourge of organized crime, that meant that the authorities were stretched extremely thin.
Ooh. It's almost like something called the War on Drugs.
War on Drugs.
Where it didn't do anything.
Well,
and
then they were still corrupt. It ruined a lot of lives.
It did. It ruined a lot of lives.
It made a lot of money for some people, too.
And then, and including the government as well, selling illegal drugs in order to make money for their black budget operations.
Yeah, big pharma, thank you for all the death.
So it's in this environment that the Barker boys started committing crimes together, starting with a bank robbery in Washington, Arkansas, in December of 19...
That's how it is?
In December of 1925. Remember, I'm from a town called Rochester, Texas. It just happens out there.
I know.
They're always way worse than the original city, because Rochester, Texas, somehow is worse than Rochester, New York.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
Nobody there.
Although Miami, Oklahoma, I bet you there's like a dive that's really fun. I bet you'd have a good night in Miami, Oklahoma.
There's like 500 people there. There's one place
that would be fun.
Got to have at least three. That's the rule of Texas. You got to have at least 3,000 people to really support a bar. And even then, it's only going to go for 2 or 3 years before everyone gets too drunk and weird and you have to close it again.
That's so sad. Yeah, it's like a Facebook group.
Aww. Yeah. Well, in that December 25 robbery, one gang member was shot during the getaway, but the boys still came away with $7,000. Now, they almost got caught when Fred tried exchanging some of the stolen coins for cash in Okmulgee, Oklahoma. But since there was no physical proof connecting Fred to the robbery, he got away once again. By 1926, Herman and Fred began building their gang even larger to pull off even more impressive heists. Along with six other Central Park gang members, Herman and Fred stole cash, jewels, and other merchandise totaling $100,000 in just 3 months.
Damn.
That totals, in today's value, $1.5 million.
Yeah, dog. They're really starting. Now they're starting to get a hold. Yeah. They're trying to catch on.
Big time money,
trying to
man.
Figure out how to do it.
Herman and Fred, using their diminutive size and hoping to avoid complicating violence, gained entry into stores through crawl spaces or by cutting a small hole in the roof and dropping through the ceiling.
It's why Jet Li is crucial. He's crucial in the heist. And you have to remember,
that's true.
That's why he's, and also when it comes down to it, at any time, you could put a big hat on him, give him a big lollipop. They're kids.
They're kids. Tom Cruise, absolutely. Mission was possible because he was so tiny.
Oversized pants, like they're walking around in their father's clothes, and they go like, "Man, my mommy with my daddy," and it isn't too late until all of a sudden they're like, "Bucka, bucka, bucka, fucking light you up with a bunch of Tommy."
Fantastic.
The only slip-up was when Herman dropped a hat at one of the crime scenes, which police tracked back to Herman through the store where he bought it. But after a well-placed bribe paid for by those same robberies, Herman was set free after 5 days in jail.
That's what we call capital.
Capital.
And we now understand is that if you use this to foster, because as we'll get to in the second episode, the Barker gang, they paid everybody off as soon as they could. They were job creators.
Honestly, grease the wheels, give the money. You got to.
I mean, to.
No, the Barker gang very quickly failed. Like, once Alvin Karpis came into it, they figured out that the way you stay out of jail is by making friends with the establishment.
Makes
sense.
You get
into corruption. That's where the money
corruption.
Is.
Corruption!
Oh, yeah. Not in your petty vandalism.
No. Absolutely.
Fred, however, was not as lucky as Herman in getting out of these crimes. After being caught with the exact same amount of money as had just been stolen from the furniture and butcher shop, Fred was sentenced to 5 to 10 years at the Kansas State Penitentiary. So at this point, 3 of the 4 Barker boys were in prison. Lloyd and Fred for robbery and Doc for murder. But despite being alone, Herman did not slow down. And if anything, both his robberies and his recklessness increased with the commission of each crime thereafter. Between December 1926 and January 1927, Herman robbed a jewelry store in Oklahoma, robbed a bank on Christmas Eve, robbed another bank on New Year's Eve in Arkansas, and robbed another bank in Jasper, Missouri. And all of this with a new wife named Carol, who seemed to have no problem tagging along.
Again, try to change somebody. If you're with somebody, the whole point is to find somebody who's into the things you're into as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because they say, oh, my crazy matches his crazy.
Yep. And then you have vice versa. You wear shirts saying like, I'm with stupid. And then they pointed at each other.
No, they're both stupid.
Yeah.
They have stupid kids.
Yeah. And then they just keep growing country. And they vote.
They can vote stupid.
And those stupid kids have more piles of kids and they all vote. Yeah.
That's awesome. So happy everyone's stupid.
Yeah.
On that last job in Jasper, though, Herman was shot and arrested, but escaped 2 weeks later by slithering up through a skylight in the jail's roof.
Cool.
Wow.
From there, Herman got even more reckless, and in July, things spun completely out of his control. After trying to cash traveler's checks in Wyoming that he'd stolen from a bank in Buffalo, Kansas.
It's fine. We're lazy. Americans are lazy. The pioneers.
There has to be so many different names. Name one. Just name it Stu.
The pioneers were lazy. They wanted to go name a new place where they can re-succeed in a place that they failed. They went to Buffalo to try to start a rubber factory. They fucked up. So they moved to Buffalo and then they moved to Kansas. They made a new Buffalo. So it's like now we're doing rubber.
Absolutely. You can, if you can make it in New York, Idaho, you can make it anywhere.
In Idaho.
In Idaho.
Manhattan, Kansas.
Whoa.
Kansas.
Yeah.
You can do very well in Kansas.
Maybe.
Well, Herman got the cops called on him in Wyoming by a clerk who didn't believe that Herman's real name was R.D. Snodgrass.
That sounds like when I'm making up a name for a bit.
Yeah.
Ruford T. Hamburger.
Yeah.
It sounds like my name is Johnny Carson.
Well, Herman ran, but eventually a deputy named Osborne caught up and pulled him over. When Deputy Osborne went to open Herman's door, though, Herman pulled his .32 caliber revolver and fired twice, then sped off to leave the deputy die on the side of the road. Now, apparently, Herman's wife, Carol, was a little freaked out by this spur-of-the-moment murder.
Right.
But after a brief scuffle, she stuck with him.
There's something about family. There's a lot of Vin Diesel in this story, right?
Yeah.
When these people get together and it's like family.
You can
get
in like here. Family,
we're going to be fucking like we're together. We're in this together. Like, because when it comes down to it.
But I don't think that she knew that was going to happen, though.
No, absolutely not. But still, then afterwards, well, now he's a murderer. So now I kind of have to stay with him because what if he fucking kills me?
Right.
And then you're like, you're kind of locked in. And then, but they all kind of understood him. They created this line where they were like, no, we're not going down. We're not going down ever. And it started very, very early where it's like they wanted to keep this going. Oof. Even though it sounds like robbing banks is a really hard job.
Yeah. I think if you get one, stop.
I guess.
That's very lucky.
But for the murder, Herman got a $100 bounty put on his head and became the second Barker boy to take a life. And this, it seemed, was the impetus that sped Herman Barker to his doom. A month after the murder of Officer Osborne, Herman and a couple of outlaws named Charlie Stallcup and Porter Meeks broke into the office of an ice plant. They beat the night watchman half to death and came away with a paltry $200.
Names used to be better, man.
Hold on a second. They just made ice?
Yeah, this is back in the day.
That's the thing. You needed ice because you had an ice box in your house to keep things cold, and so you had to replace it with a gigantic block of ice once a week. So
I
you
see
had to
for
manufacture
ice,
ice.
Okay.
Yeah, it was before we came up with proper refrigeration where we just go. So back in the day, you used to make those big ice plants. And I honestly, in my mind, I don't know if they'd have a lot of cash on hand.
No, it's ice. It's just water.
Nice. People paid good money for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I think they paid money for it. It couldn't have been that expensive.
Well, this was not the gang's lucky night in more ways than one, because the night watchman proved to be of sterner stuff than they thought, and he managed to call the police just as the gang was driving away. At 2 a.m., the cops caught up to Herman Barker and his accomplices for a late-night high-speed chase.
Yes! Whoa.
Eventually, though, Herman stopped the car in yet another highly reckless move that came with an even more reckless follow-up plan. When the two officers chasing Herman got close to the car, Herman reached out the window and grabbed one of them by the collar.
Jeez.
He then pulled the cop close and shot the officer twice in the face.
Dude, that's how I used to play fucking Halo, dude. Up close and fucking personal, dude.
It's just
Up fucking close and personal,
It's just like you and your underwear Superstone playing a video game.
Yeah, bro.
It's just like that.
Well, the other officer then opened fire, hitting Herman and Charlie Stallcup while Porter Meeks broke and ran.
You guys are crazy. You're all crazy.
Get the fuck out of there, man.
Herman got hit in the chest while Charlie got shot in both of his thighs, his right arm, and his right hand. That other cop was a fucking good shot.
That's a good ass shot.
Yeah. Well, driving away erratically because of the blood loss, Herman eventually lost control and hit a tree near an all-night hamburger stand.
What would I do to be a hamburger right now?
That'd be nice.
He got out of the car, but rather than being taken back to prison, Herman Barker took his revolver and shot himself in the head at the age of 33.
Damn.
Outside of the hamburger stand?
Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, some people just sitting there with their milkshakes just being like, man, that's fucking crazy.
This is good. It's a crazy night at the hamburger stand, huh? No, also, why are we here at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Just having fun, just getting out here. We've been robbing the hamburger stand all night. And then I realized when it came down, I'd actually rather make a hamburger and some milkshakes for you and my friend.
Right.
Now, no city official in Oklahoma would allow the body to be buried in their state at first. But eventually, the Barker family lawyer, a Cherokee named Quanah Parker McGee, negotiated a plot for Herman in Welch, Oklahoma.
Oh.
Interestingly, Carol, Herman's wife, had to attend the burial in secret, and not just because she was still wanted by authorities in connection with Herman's first murder. Who she reportedly was more afraid of was Ma Barker, who had threatened Carol with bodily harm because Ma believed that it was Carol, not Herman, who had shot Officer Osborne with the revolver.
My boy would never do something like that, even though he's had a whole life of criminality.
Yeah, it seems exactly what your boy would do, Ma.
No.
Yes. No, yes.
It's what women do. Always
women
betray.
Shoot police officers.
Women always betray.
How can you be right and wrong?
I'm a mother, not a woman.
I see.
So at this point, the Barker crime family seemed to be at an end before it even began. Lloyd Barker was in prison for the next 25 years, out of the game. Herman Barker was, of course, dead. Doc was in prison for murder in Oklahoma, and Fred was in Leavenworth doing 5 to 10. But it's at Leavenworth that Fred Barker met the special sauce that the Barker gang needed this whole time. The brains to go along with the guts. This man was Alvin Old Creepy Karpus. And that's where we'll pick back up for part two with some of the most daring and deadly bank robberies of the 1920s.
Woo! Wow. So it seems like they're starting off a little bit behind the eight ball here. They're all incarcerated. One is dead. Ma doesn't know what's going on. She's alone. She's twiddling her own bean.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. This story is going to get absolutely insane. It already has been.
What I do love about the story is, again, these are like, this is the American criminality that, like, because we'll
it's
see.
The quilt.
People just get obsessed with these stories, too, during the time period. Like, it will never be
I believe
it,
man, because can you imagine, like, thank God we're not them. But also, it's just crazy to hear about.
I actually really think it's fascinating in the time period that the idea of there being like famous criminals, like they adopted from the Old West mentality, like this idea that these gunmen were something that people were all like interested in, and they would talk to the press and they would jive back and forth. It was a very interesting time period.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's your favorite criminal? John Dillinger or Pretty Boy Floyd? You know, that type of, like those types. And there's like children having those conversations too. It's fucking insane.
And then again, every time, you know, how many times were you asked that question in 2018? Why true crime now? And it's just being like, no, why true crime always?
Always and forever.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening. We can't wait to see y'all in Texas this weekend. I'll tell you one thing. Austin was a gosh darn hoot.
Oh, are you saying that you better? Oh, we know that for certain.
Remember that one time, Marcus, where you did that thing on stage in Austin? Henry, you did that other thing on stage in Austin?
Do you remember when we human centipeded each other and Kissel was in the middle?
No, yeah. I would be in the
you have to be the middle because of corners.
Yeah, corners.
Oh, God, that's the worst position.
Actually, okay. No, that's the thing. Him being in the middle actually makes the corners harder.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not going to be able to,
you're wrong.
Henry has to be in the middle.
He has
Henry,
the most turning radius.
No, you have the most turning radius.
No, I don't. You're like, look at how much I can turn.
The accordion that's on a double bus, the accordion in the middle. No, you don't even know.
Yeah, that's the thing. The accordion in the middle. And also think about a semi. You don't put the fucking trailer in front, do you? No, you put it in the back. And then,
I'm not the trailer. Kissel's obviously the trailer.
I want to be Dr. Dieter Laser.
Yes, you're trying to catch yourself out of this.
Yeah.
Whatever, man.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for supporting everything we're up to over here. We hope you're doing well out there. Can't wait in February. Just another reminder, we will be going wide, so you can get it on PodNut.
You can get it on PodNut. You can get it on SoundBasket, whatever your podcast bullshit is.
Whatever you want to do.
We'll end on Spotify. We'll continue to be on Spotify. Yep. We are mostly going to be on Stitcher. We're going to be everywhere.
We're going to be everywhere.
So that's
everywhere.
We're going to be everywhere. We're everywhere you want to be, baby.
Nothing's changing like with the Patreon. Everything's exactly the same. It's an incredible deal. Everybody's happy. We're ready
to
crush it.
You're what? You're just, you're, who are you trying to convince?
Me. I'm trying to convince me. No, honestly, I feel
all right.
Oh, everyone. And don't forget, Soul Plumber number 4 is out there. It's out there and ready to be bought. And a lot of comic book stores definitely have copies. Like they reordered number 1 and they got all 4 copies. In fact, here in Greenpoint, if you want to go to Action City Comics, know Eric out there has all the issues. If you're a New York City denizen and you're looking to catch up on Soul Plumber,
those motherfuckers.
Fantastic.
Action City Comics out in Greenpoint. Great place.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail
Oh, hell game.
Magustalations, everybody. Take care of yourself out there.
Hey, can we heal me, huh?
Yeah, come on. Can we heal you?
Someone come over here. And, you know, I heard it was bad if you can't feel your pulse in your ankles.
It's bad. Huh. It's diabetic. It's
but
pre-diabetes.
I can feel it. No, but I can feel it. I checked. So check.
Well, good.
You should check it at home.
Yeah. Okay. Just kind of a random
yeah,
health.
I was just thinking about
just
it.
Random health advice.
I was just thinking about it. I'm scared.
Okay.
Yeah, but check. I'm fine, though. I'm feeling. I can feel the bumps.
Check your ankles.
Yep.
Check. And let us know what you think about them.
Yes, no. Yep, it's bumping.
Great.
I'm feeling it.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.